Hello, Hospitality MD listeners, and welcome back to another episode. Today, Greg and I are proud to have Mark Lauer on the show. Mark is an experienced hotelier with decades of expertise under his belt. He currently serves as the general manager for the Sheraton Grand Chicago Riverfront. And according to my research, this is the fourth largest hotel in Chicago with 1,218 guest rooms. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So the whole basis for today's show, I think there's a lot of people in the hospitality industry, whether they're associates who've been furloughed or laid off, or just outsiders, people who've seen the impact of the hotel industry that COVID-19 has had, who are curious as to what goes on behind the scenes of a hotel that's closed. Your property, the Sheraton Grand, is currently has suspended hotel operations. And I mean, for a 1,218 room hotel, that's a lot of logistics to cover, a lot of employees, and then not to mention managing it while it is closed and certainly reopening. So I want to talk with you a little bit about that today. I think that'll provide a lot of value for our listeners. But before we do that, I want to get a pulse on your background, your origins of your love for hospitality. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. Actually, this is the 40th year that I have been in this career. And when I started actually at the Chicago Marriott on the Magnificent Mile. And didn't know you could make a career out of hospitality. Graduated from Loyola University here with a political science degree and thought running conventions and planning conventions would be fun. And that's where I started. And worked my way through events into sales and marketing through Chicago, through Salt Lake, San Francisco. Moved up to a company in Seattle that became a company called Red Lion that then became bought by DoubleTree, bought by Promise, and bought by Hilton all in 4 years. So those mergers took place in the late 90s. Was sitting in as GM of the Omaha DoubleTree in the beginning of 2001. And I got a call from the Waldorf Astoria in New York to go be the director of marketing there. And that and I've always, I always enjoyed big hotels. I worked in Mag Mile Hotel, San Francisco Marquis, which is now the Marquis. And I've always loved working in big hotels. And so then I moved out to New York, and 7 months later, the world changed on 9/11, and was director of marketing at the Waldorf for 3 years, and then ran the operations as hotel manager for 6 years. And then moved over to the New York Hilton, and ran that hotel, a 2,000 room hotel in Midtown Manhattan, for 4 years. And then the ownership of this hotel said, "Do you want to move home?" And I actually did. My wife and I had a great opportunity, and we moved home, and have really enjoyed being back in Chicago and the hospitality of Chicago. So through it all, at the end of the day, you have to get up every morning. One, I get up every morning and, and most 95, 96% of the time I'm thinking, man, this is going to be a lot of fun and I get paid to do this, right? So this is, I get to go do this. But to do this is to be of service to others. And that service to others is either your guest or your associates. And whether that is an hourly associate or a manager, to really come into with the mindset of I want to be of service to others, and there are times, and especially as you get into the luxury hotels, you want to make sure, and I always tell people, you're not a servant, but you're truly of service to others, and how does that look and feel, and how can you make sure you're setting your team up, whatever team I'm on, am I setting my team up for success, am I giving them the tools and the opportunity necessary, whether I'm directly taking care of the guest or they're directly taking care of the guest, or each other, how do we do that? So that's what's motivated me and kept me going. And, you know, as I look at where we stand right now, you know, it's something that no one in our industry, like I said, I've been through 9/11 in New York, and we rebuilt the business, and the business came back relatively quickly, probably 6 months, and then that we really got everything back going. But there was demand there, and there was opportunity. Through the 08 and 09, you know, financial crisis in New York, rebuilt that, and that was more centered on just one segment, but certainly impacted our particular hotel, the Waldorf, dramatically because just of who the customers were and, you know, who we typically had meeting with us, many of the financial houses. So that impacted our business. But again, we rebuilt it. And in this case, we're going to rebuild. It's just how we're going to do it. And it's completely changed. You know, you think back to, you know, one, how everyone flew, you know, you'd go through security, but it really wasn't TSA checkpoints and it wasn't all the things, and we kept our shoes on and we did all those things. And after 9/11, we all had to learn and adjust. After the pandemic, we're going to have to learn and adjust and figure out, you know, the first part we have to do is provide our associates and our guests a clean and safe environment. And that has been something I learned 40 years ago and have practiced for 40 years. So we've got to, that's the core of it. You know, we've got to figure out how to do that.
So all things considered, you know, you mentioned you've been through a number of different disruptions to the industry throughout the course of your career, and specifically in locations hit the hardest by it. Would you say this is the biggest challenge that you've faced in your career?
I think so, only because, you know, we knew, you know, we had a sense of, okay, here's what we got to do, and we're going to come out on the other end. And when you're in the middle of it, not so much. But I think what we have to do as an industry is rethink every step of what our associate goes through, what our customer goes through, what services our customers want, what services they don't want, how to deliver those services now, what will be the both the appropriate protocol and the legal protocol, and all of those things. So, you know, I've been meeting with the team, the small team that we have here, and, you know, when you said, how do you run it? Well, you know, we have security and engineering, and that's it, and five managers with us right now. And we, you know, we sit and we literally walk through and go, okay, let's walk through the check-in. What does that mean? What do we have to have? You know, what are the appropriate barriers, the appropriate distance? What's, you know, and then what's the cleaning protocols? You know, what's, you know, so each step of the way, you know, how do you, you know, when the associate arrives on property, coming through the employee entrance, you know, all of those things, every step you've got to now sit back. And to me, I find that interesting. I find that challenging. You know, and it's like, okay, we get a restart, in many ways, restart our business, but in a completely different way. And the hotels and the companies that are able to demonstrate to their associates and to their guests, we've changed, we're doing it differently, we're providing the, you know, the top, safest and cleanest environment that we can, are the ones who are going to be successful. And I expect that our team will come back. And as we rebuild our team and we rebuild our business, that we will come back and we will, you know, continue to set the standards and to achieve what we set out to do.
Yeah, I definitely think it looks like we're all going to have to kind of tear up the playbook. And I mean, especially like you've been in the industry for 40 years, and I'm, you know, I'd venture to think that most of, you know, the housekeeping operation and the front office procedures and just the general hotel operations have stayed relatively the same throughout all of that. As far as, you know, how do you operate a lodging institution? Well, it hasn't changed much. And I think now, you know, after doing it for 40 years, everybody, you know, you are going to have to relearn it, as well as everybody on your team who, I'm sure you have a lot of tenured staff who've been doing a lot of things the same ways for a long time. So it's going to be an adjustment for everybody. And I'm personally just as excited as you are to kind of see where that takes us. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the chronology of all this, because having gone through it as well at my property, this is something that I thought was probably the most fascinating of all of it. So why don't we kind of, I want to paint a picture for everybody who maybe wasn't a part of it or wasn't behind the scenes. Let's talk about right before this pandemic started. What did the hotel look like? What were you looking forward to? What projects did you have? What goals did you have? So on and so forth.
I think we came out of the end of February with probably the, you know, one of the best starts to our year in the last 5 years, 6 years. And we really felt good about the year. We were set up for success. We had a very robust March coming, and you know, we looked down the road, saw lots of leisure activity, a lot of things happening in Chicago. We were very excited about, you know, what the year looked like. And truly, I can remember the day we had a large group, and we had been tracking this, and as it continued to grow, and it came on very, very quickly, as everyone knows. I've never seen our industry and our economy in any way, you know, collapse in literally 3 weeks. You know, and from about March 9th through about March 25th, 26th, somewhere in there. I mean, it just, you know, it went from robust to nothing. You know, so, and just to be, you know, as we got down to those levels of occupancy and seeing how quickly and this impact, because again, you know, after 9/11, it was 2 or 3 weeks where, again, the airlines weren't flying, you know, and everyone held back. And then they were trying to figure out, how do we fly? How do we make it safe? And it took them a little while, and it took them a while to get realigned. But once the airlines opened up and started to fly, you know, off we, you know, we started to, people gain confidence and off we went. And we got back to business. But here, you know, now it is the dramatic impact it's having on people's lives, on their families, on their health, on their livelihoods, has been, you know, probably it has been, you know, the most impactful and fastest I've ever seen in my career. And now that's what I was saying. Now, how do we rebuild with everything that we're facing? And that's what each company and each organization, each hotel is looking at.
So, yeah, because I mean, I think a lot of us could have said the same thing. You know, at the end of February, we come out All-Star Weekend, which is a great weekend for the city, a lot of buzz and excitement, you know, a strong start to the year when typically, you know, most Februarys don't look that great. Super optimistic for the future. And then we start seeing some initial impacts of this. I know for us, it was like, okay, we see, like, I think the big one for me that really made me think, you know, oh, this is kind of serious, is when Home and Housewares canceled their program at McCormick Place. And I was like, okay, so this is right off the bat, if that's the only thing that comes of this, which I knew it wouldn't be, but if that was the only thing that would come of it, it would already be a huge impact. You know, you see that, you start to see some groups canceling, and then it started to pick up some momentum. What was your experience behind the scenes in your EC meetings, you know, speaking with your managers, and kind of your stance as far as from the highest up leadership at the hotel? How are you managing this as it started to pick up momentum and as people's anxieties started to pick up?
I think it was a couple of things. To your point, you know, we knew that the, as part of the Houseware show, we knew the China Pavilion, which drew, you know, a lot of international guests, the China Pavilion was not going to run this year. That was sort of the first indication of, okay, this thing starting to spread, it's pandemic. And China wasn't traveling. They weren't coming to the show. But we were like, okay, well, it's still going to be a good show. To your point, you know, we had a group that, you know, canceled on Thursday for a Sunday arrival, in-house group. Didn't shock us, but the speed of the decision, because all of a sudden it was like, we can't be together. Somebody gets, you know, gets ill, spreads it. What are we going to do? And I don't think at that point we really understood the severity, the impact. And, you know, we were learning as much about, you know, I was reading everything I could and seeing everything I could and listening, you know, to our various phone calls. And, you know, the company started a cadence of frequent communications. I started a cadence of frequent communications, both with my executive committee and my leadership team, and being as visible as I can in the hotel. But you could see our business, like I said, just completely collapse and shrink in, you know, a matter of 10, 12, 14 days, both the cancellations. And quite honestly, when we started, we were like, okay, but this will go through April, maybe May at the most. We're going to bounce back and we're going to be just fine. You know, we'll have restaurant show and then we're off to the races for the, you know, and obviously not the case. And as we continued to develop it and really understand the social distancing and what that meant and the way that, you know, this has been transmitted and the lives of the people who've been impacted and, you know, on and on, you realize, boy, this is much bigger than I think anyone initially thought it was. And it's going to be a much longer period and then a much longer recovery. You know, but I think the ability to communicate frequently, you know, as we were really getting into it, I had twice a day leadership meetings with my executive committee and my key department heads, you know, 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. Okay, what are we doing now? You know, what's on the checklist? You know, making sure that, you know, we were going through and whether it was cleaning protocols of the cleaning protocols we knew, whether it was communication to our associates, to, you know, to our guests, just everything. But we were, you know, in those type of situations, you have to step up and, you know, and drive the process, and not, you know, take the chance that, well, this will happen. No, you have to double check and make sure, you know, that you're, you know, in these situations, over communicate, have everybody around the table and everybody, you know, make sure that everybody's on the same page all the time.
Yeah, I think, you know, we, even before like all the shelter in place orders started, you know, kind of across the country and here in Illinois, there was still even an expectation, I guess maybe an, you know, unwritten or unspoken expectation on the hotel that there was some sort of response to this growing pandemic in the guest viewpoint. I mean, I know we were just having conversations with our team about, okay, you know, what do you say if somebody asks you about the coronavirus when they're checking in? What do you do if somebody says they're scared? And, you know, and this is before travel restrictions happened. So there was still a lot of training that happened to go into it. But again, to your point, within a matter of 2 weeks, you know, it was daily, it was hour by hour, everything, you know, kind of changed. You tell the team one thing and then, you know, something else happens and you have to change your tune and tell something else, which I think is, you know, those twice a day leadership meetings probably very productive for that reason. So as you're speaking with your leadership team, as people are expressing their concerns, at what point was the conversation of actually closing the hotel? When did that even start to be on the table for you?
Mid to late March. We made the decision on a Monday morning. Ownership, our company, everyone, we made a decision that, to close on Monday, and we were closed by Thursday.
Wow.
We had been working on it. We knew what systems and where we needed to be. We moved, very quickly, to get that. And, I think to your point earlier about just about communications, in the absence of direct communications, what happens is, and clear facts, people start to, not maliciously, but people just start to either fill in what they think or, create scenarios, and they go, well, no, this is really, and then you're spending an inordinate amount of time and energy backtracking and trying to undo conversations or what people are thinking, or, so it's, to me, it's like, no, that's where you need just strong, direct communications as to what's happening and here's where we stand. So people can plan immediately. But we were able to, again, the team meeting constantly, having our checklists of what we had to do, from engineering, closing down the building, to security, securing the building, to shutting down all the systems, getting the reservation systems, notifying all the guests, the future guests, of that. The team did an exceptional job of thinking through every piece of that and what do we have to do and who has to do it and where are the resources to help do that. And that's where, again, as teamwork comes in, where it's not, the department who needs the resources says, hey, I need some resources here. We get resources there. We get that task fixed. And then another department says, nope, now we need these resources, and people move over to help. So it was really the teamwork, but the thought process, and then just the execution of each and every step as we went through.
And so in a matter of just a few days, you made that decision and then actually executed everything, and the hotel was closed. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Like, tell me about the conversation where you all came to the determination that you had to close. Was that a solemn type of conversation? Did it feel like it was just the only thing that you had to do? Like, tell me a little bit about what that was like.
Oh, we had a lot of different tools. We had looked at, you evaluate your business and you do closure models and you do modeling of the business and you figure out, is it going to cost us more money to stay open and operate, or is it going to cost us, or is it a better business decision to temporarily suspend the operation? And it was really driven by the data. It wasn't, as much as we wanted to stay open, even if we had stayed open and said, we want to keep it. You're going to have two or three housekeepers, one or two people in your grab and go, one front desk agent. So it's not like, you're keeping the team, right? So it's really data driven, and you say, okay, from a business decision, what's the best business decision we can make for the longevity of this building and of this operation that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because how many team members did you have before the layoffs and furloughs?
We have 80 leaders, and full time we have about 500 full time associates.
Right. So if you're going from 500 associates down to four or five, you know, between everything, and I'm sure you would have closed some departments at that point. You're not really retaining any of your team, so that kind of takes that part of the decision, makes that a little easier, I guess. When you're looking at the numbers, I'm sure it only makes sense, especially for such a large property as well. Now your property is closed. How long do you think it will be closed? And has that changed at all as new information has come out and as we've seen this play out?
I don't have a date set. We've set the end of June currently. But again, a lot depends on the data, and we're working through the various modeling of our business, looking at, you know, when do we see the market picking up? When do we start to see future reservations being made? When do the airlines open? Again, you know, the first customers that are coming are going to be the eight states around us that typically drive in. That's where 70% of our leisure business for the whole city comes in, right? So we're going to go after that first. But, you know, we can say we're open and doing business, but if LA and San Francisco and Denver and Dallas and Chicago and Detroit and Boston and New York and Atlanta, I think going around the country, if those airports aren't open and they're not really, you know, full up, you know, you're not going to, you know, see the business levels come back. You'll see business levels come back to a certain point, but, you know, we got to get the hubs open. We got to get the airlines back flying. And they've got to have all their protocols. People aren't going to fly if they don't feel safe, right? From airports to the airplanes, to then the transportation coming in. So it's all of these things that are interconnected to make sure that as a guest, as a traveler, I'm feeling from the time I leave my home till I return to my home, am I in a, you know, a safe environment or an environment that I can control and feel good about? So, you know, there's so many different components of it, but we've got to be able to get those out. So no, we're looking at all the different modeling seeing, you know, and using all the tools and just seeing what the market says, what the market seems to be doing, and trying to make decisions off of that. So, I think at a certain point, you know, part of you too, you go, okay, we just got to open and get going again. But, we need the city to be open as well. And there's a lot of folks that are actively working on that as well.
Yeah, I think, you do make a good point. I'm sure to a certain extent, at what point do you just say, okay, we just have to open because we've been stagnating for too long. But do you have a like threshold as far as like your forecasted occupancy that you would need to hit for it to be even financially justifiable for you guys to open? Are you looking at it like that, or are you primarily looking at it from just a market resurgence rather than an actual occupancy and ADR threshold?
No, you do both. You model the business, and you, again, just like your closing model, you model the business to say, okay, what is it going to cost me more money to stay closed, or if I open, you know, what you don't want to do is open, not run enough occupancy, have the cost structure, and actually lose more money than if you were closed, right? So, you know, there's that line, and you're gonna say, what's that number? I don't have that number yet, all right? So we're still working through that. And, you know, like most of our business, you know, again, you know, it's as much art as it is science. Earlier in your conversation, I kind of want to go back to something you said about, you know, as we restart, you know, I think, you know, again, when I started, there was no revenue management. There was reservations, right? But there was no revenue management. You think about when I started, how many telephone operators do we have? A lot, right? Because people were using their phones. now, you know, we have a system set up, every hotel does, that, you know, someone dials 911 from the room, we pick up and security, and we understand it, it goes through to 911, but we also, we pick up so that we can go assist and respond immediately and set up for the emergency arrival. Now, most, you know, 50% of the time, an ambulance may pull up to a hotel and, you know, they were called on their cell phone. So we didn't even know that there's a guest who needs help, right? And this has been at many hotels. So again, you know, I go back to, I look at, you know, I'm sure this hotel opened in 1992 with 25 bellmen, right? Hmm. You know, the person who created wheels on a suitcase isn't a bellman's friend, right? You know, our business has evolved and changed. You know, how many, you know, the wireless internet, you know, and making sure that you have, you know, enough bandwidth and that you are driving, you know, that's what our customers want in their guest rooms, right? And making sure that they have all of those comforts and our guest room entertainment packages and all of those things. You know, again, that's evolved over time, and the importance of IT to our guest has dramatically changed over time. So part of this is an evolution now of the next thing, but the speed, you know, this is more, this evolution is, has happened at a pace that, you know, we would have never seen before, but of sense of awareness, of sense of cleanliness, sense of just the other person and social distancing and, you know, potential that, you know, what's your interaction with them and, you know, are they a healthy person and on, so, you know, our business has evolved so many times and continues to, and the people who don't evolve with it, you know, aren't open very long. You got to constantly be looking for what's that new service, what's that new customer expectation, right? You know, I said, you know, I'm looking at our arrival experience. You know, we offer the keyless entry, you know, so we can send you your key, so you can just use your phone to, you know, to unlock your door. That's what people want. That's what people are going to want. You know, more people are looking. It was interesting. I was talking to Expedia and saying, what are customers looking for now? And one of the things they said was, people are looking for self-parking garages now. Mm. You know, is this going to hurt valet service? Absolutely. You know, think about it. You pull up in your car. Do you want somebody else in your car?
Who's been in everybody else's car, at least presumably? Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And it's not anything to do with the valet parker. It's just, yeah, they've touched so many different things. So you suddenly think about all of those things and you go, okay, so our services are going to evolve. How we offer them is going to evolve. How we connect with our guests is going to evolve. Again, if my guest is walking in the door, pulling their own suitcase and going up to the room and unlocking their door, what's been my interaction with that guest, right? How do I interact with that guest? How do I make sure they're having a good stay, that they feel a warm and genuine welcome, and they know that they're appreciated as a guest? So it's those sort of things that I think, wow, we've got to really rethink our business. And I kind of told you those things that had changed over time, because those sort of evolved over, you know, I'm in my fourth or fifth generation of, you know, of wireless apps and guest rooms and the size of the, of what each room gets and, you know, on and on. But now this is immediate, and this is, you got to change, and you got to change fast, and you got to think about all the touch points and just, you know, how do we do that?
I love your sentiment because we've heard so much recently about okay, we're going to be breaking down housekeeping, and, you know, we're getting electrostatic sprayers. Marriott just released the commitment to clean. Hilton just released Clean Stay. So we're seeing a lot about that, but what I don't think, you know, we haven't gotten to the big conversation of, you know, how do you, that scenario, the guest pulling their own suitcase through the lobby, using their phone to get up to their room, going straight to the elevator. How do you still make that person feel warm and valued? And how does hospitality continue to be perpetuated in a more sterile environment, both literally and figuratively? So I think, you know, also it's, what does the guest actually want? Does feeling welcome and feeling valued, does that still mean the same now to a guest as it did before? Or is the guest just like, you know what, I have to be at the hotel and I'm just going to go to my room, and as long as it's clean and comfortable and, you know, I can get a meal, you know, left outside my door in a bag, then that's all I want. You know, it's kind of those questions that will have to be answered, and we'll see how that kind of moves going forward. But I think a little bit of that is going to have to be, we need some guests back first to see how that goes.
But, and you know, I think the guests always want to feel, hey, when you go somewhere, you want to feel appreciated. Now the question is, how do you communicate that? Because, yeah, I expect my room, and I need my room to be, and I have to have confidence that my room is clean and safe, right? And I've got to have confidence that, you know, the food preparation that I'm attending, and that I can meet in large groups, and I can have conventions, and I can have meetings, and, you know, there's protocols of how to, you know, keep us all safe. So, you know, we've looked at, you know, the wind has come out in Las Vegas. You know, think about the thousands and thousands of people a day, you know, who come through and touch every surface in that place, you know.
Sure.
And how they do it and what they're going to do. And, you know, and I think, you know, our own company, you're right, Marriott Cares, and the cleaning procedures. Hilton has come out with cleaning. IHG just came out with some. Hyatt's working with some industry folks. So, you know, everyone's coming out with that, but it's at the end of the day, it's our execution, right? Those are all great plans on a piece of paper. We have to have the leadership. We have to have the culture and the execution that guest is going to feel there. And that's where the value is going to come, where that guest says, they understand, they want to take care of me. And we'll get back to an engaged level at a certain point, but how that is, and it might be a lot more electronic than face-to-face, but, you know, I think, you know, we will figure that out as we go along. And the guests will tell us. The guests will tell us how they want to be communicated. I always say the guests vote with their feet. They tell us exactly what they want, how they want it. If we just, one, ask them, and two, you know, sort of study their habits and really get a sense of what services do they need, how do they need those services delivered, and when do they need those services delivered.
You know, I think I'm very interested to see how you and your property play this all out. I think that your sales and marketing background is going to be probably very valuable. I mean, maybe even more so during this kind of reopening, as I think even leisure guests and all segments are going to be relying on that communication through marketing and through the sales departments. So I think that'll definitely play to your advantage here. Now it looks like we're just about out of time. I do want to just kind of get your final thoughts, anything else you want to say, and maybe if you have a message for any of the hospitality people who are laid off or furloughed or have anxiety about what the future holds for the industry.
I think, you know, I'm always optimistic, and I'm confident that our industry will come back. Again, I've never, you know, in my years, I've I've never seen anything this impactful, this dramatic. I feel bad for, and I'm concerned obviously about our associates, both hourly and management, and the industry, right? I mean, you know, this has hurt a lot of people and their family's health, their family's ability to, you know, to live and to enjoy life. You know, as we come back, though, I think it's got to be, you still have to have at that core, you know, that willingness to be of service, that, you know, we really want to be of service to our guests. You have to have a love of that, and then build off of that and say, okay, now how are we going to do it now? And for the hospitality leaders, the managers, professionals, really think about, you know, what am I adding to the team? How can I add to the team? And the more skill set you have, the more flexible you are, the more experience that you have, you're just going to be a more valuable part of the team. And to be, but be ready to, and be open to, you know, thinking different, because the thought process of, and you hear this too often, you know, well, when we get back to business levels or when we get back to normal, well, there is no going back, right? There will be a new normal and there'll be a new rhythm and there'll be a new, you know, how you do things, but, you know, there's no rear view mirror. You know, we all hopefully, you know, remember what you've learned, remember what, you know, the things that you've brought to yourself over your careers, what's your core, you know, the ethics and the work ethic and all of those things that are your core that you bring to people. But the people who think, well, when we get back to, you know, you can't be successful that way. How are we going to move forward? How are we going to move forward together? How are we going to get this done? How are we going to understand what is the new normal? But the days of a lot of those things are gone, and we've just got to build from there. And the people who are like that, think like that, are going to be the most successful and are going to lead our industry, you know, for the next 40 years.
Well, and I'm again, you very, very excited to see, you know, what you and your team accomplish at the Sheraton, and excited to see how the rest of the industry bounces back. I thank you so much for your time today. I think you've provided a lot of value and insight that our listeners are going to be very, very appreciative for. Thank you so much for your time today, and look forward to keeping in touch, Mark.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.